Chapter 15. Tick. The world around me ground to a screaming halt as I skimmed through the time-trance stage and barreled headfirst into a full-blown time-stop. Tit. Ugh. The sensation felt like I'd just rammed a car dead-on into a concrete wall, and the very inertia of the planet seemed to have stalled, with me stuck like a fly to its surface. It felt unnatural, and unlike last time, I could tell I went completely overboard by simply trying to stop a feather from falling through the air. Even though it was nearly impossible to lift my own arm because of how much power I'd accidentally released, I was at least glad my instincts were overly cautious when it came to preserving my friend's brain. I didn't mind that the feather felt like it weighed 50 pounds, or that my face was drenched in sweat, as long as I could remove the evidence of what the Falcon Man was doing above him. As long as there was no chance of Jenner ever blowing the curse trap in his mind before Horus was finished, then I was happy, and I could figure out how to hone the particulars of the time stop with Zoe later. For now, I needed to focus on my task, and inch by inch, it slowly became easier to move through the dense atmosphere so I could accomplish my goal until I was able to ball up the traitorous feather in my fist and then lower my arm back down to my side. Just in time, too. Snap! My power exhausted its reach and rebounded back to hit me in the chest. And because Jenner was still staring at me expectantly, I had to swallow back the nauseating feeling of having all of my insides slammed back inside me. "Oh, I meant I would ask Shay more about how she got into stuff like animal husbandry," I said, and shook my head inconspicuously to get the sensation to abate. "I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted because of Rylan." Jenner's hard gaze softened instantly, and right away the angry red glow I could kinda see vanished completely.
"Right, no need for apologies. I'm sorry as well. Lately my mind seems... Anyway, that is a good idea, by the way."
I blinked at the sudden whiplash of Jenner's supposed train of thought. I thought for sure the man was about to reveal his knowledge of the something-not-rightness lurking in his clever brain, and then thereby doom himself indefinitely because he was just that smart. Apparently his subconscious self-preservation won out, because now we were back to the previous topic, and I had to pretend like nothing was amiss. "With Shay," I ventured, in order to encourage the conversation away from anything that might make those ominous glowing cracks appear. "She's been teaching him what she knows, especially about basic animal first aid, and a lot about canterflies. Did she ever go to the academy?"
"There is no record of her ever attending, but this doesn't surprise me," he replied. "Dola, knowing how valuable his daughter was, combined with his natural paranoia, probably kept her close by at all times until he married her off to Ren."
"Hate that guy," I grumbled fervently.
"Which one?" he asked,
with an arch of his furry eyebrows. "Yes," I growled, and this obtuse answer seemed to amuse Jenner, because he barked out a laugh that turned into a guffaw, and then back into jovial, drunken chortling.
"I agree with you," he finally said after he caught his breath. "They both were bastards of the highest caliber."
I grinned, especially when I spotted Horus extracting himself from the now orange Sims diamond until it was gone. But I finally let out the breath I seemed to be holding at the sight of the Falcon Man retreating back into the shadows. "Too bad I didn't make them suffer more," I sighed, with just the right amount of gallows humor coloring my voice to cause the Koala Man to dissolve back into giddy laughter. The noise was loud enough to rouse my teenage son, and he snorted awake in a panic before falling off the chair and onto his ass with a hard thunk. Jenner gasped and wheezed through those tight old man giggles, complete with knee slapping and everything, and I couldn't help but join in the hilarity with a pang in my heart. He reminded me so much of Tovish at that moment, and I spared a second to remember the old codger.
"What? Huh?"
Ryland said groggily as he tried to comprehend his surroundings. Then he stumbled to his feet and rubbed his backside.
Ouch!
Good evening, Princess, I teased, just so I could see him scowl.
I'll do what you asked,
he immediately went on the defensive. And I held up a hand in warning before he could get all angsty McAngstburger. You did good, kid, I said, and patted him on the shoulder. Relax. Just because you might be in the shit with me right now doesn't mean everything I say or do is an attack.
Okay,
he said, and scuffed his foot along the floorboards in a habit he had yet to shake.
Sorry.
Just go to bed, I said, and scrubbed a hand through his wrecked hair. Before I kick your ass.
Why would you do that?
He gasped in mock offense, exactly like Horace did on occasion. And I swung out a playful foot so we would have to dodge. I don't know, I'm sure there's something you deserve an ass-kicking for. I then followed through with a snap kick from my other foot, and I was proud when he blocked me with his crossed forearms like a pro.
Not in my library,
Jenner chided us both, and I snagged the kid around the neck with my arm so I could noogie him until he squirmed free.
Children?
Uh-oh, I chuckled. I know I need to stop when I'm lumped into that category. Nonsense, Horace said, as he closed the library doors behind him and sauntered in like he'd just arrived. The children's table has all the best food in bite size and the funnest table decorations usually.
You just like not having to eat with forks and the colored charcoal they put on a children's table,
Ryland scoffed.
Which is silly because you can get colored charcoal any time you want.
You're missing the point, Ryrai, Horace needled in an annoying voice that would earn him a seat at the kids' table just by default.
Which is,
he deadpanned, that it's your bedtime because you're still a kid, I slipped in. And I snickered at the expression of betrayal on his young face.
That bites, he said.
And it was such a teen thing to say circa 1990s Earth, so I couldn't help but throw my head back and laugh long and loud. Go, I said and pointed to the doors. Get thee to bed, fiend. You have to be rested enough to resume your work in the library with Mr. Jenner. At this, I glanced at the koala man, who was now contentedly observing the banter between all three of us with a soft smile.
Oh!
He cleared his throat and adjusted his monocle.
Yes, I will lead you back here for the labeling of things. Right.
Ryland rolled his eyes and huffed as he made his way to the door, muttering under his breath.
Last time I'll give you brandy.
Good night, Ryland, I said pointedly. And he straightened his posture and let his attitude slough off his shoulders just like that.
I mean, see you tomorrow, Mr. Jenner,
he said without a hint of bitterness. And I admired that about the kid. He genuinely didn't let things stick to him like most teenagers I remember being surrounded by. Maybe Jenner was right, and he would actually thrive in a setting like at the academy where he could meet other nerds who liked animals and stuff. I never did the college thing, but I just wasn't built for that. As much as he was my son in spirit, and regardless of what all we had in common when it came to being fostered, we were actually quite different personality-wise. Talk about a learning curve. But when Ryland waved at me before heading out the door, I figured what I did learn along the way and applied to him as a parent hadn't been harming him so far. So that was a plus. Other than that, however, I didn't really know if there was a manual on pubescence that got lost with this model. But it would have been nice seeing as how I didn't remember much about being a teenager because I was in a constant survival mode. So maybe Ryland needed to be around more people he could relate to, and then everything would figure itself out. Hey, Mr. Jenner, I said, after the doors closed and Ryland was out of earshot. I think I might take you up on your advice about him and the academy.
I hoped you would,
he said with a pleased twitch of his large ears.
Shall I pull together more data on the academy on Lean?
Yeah, and can you find the spreadsheets you were talking about earlier? I requested. I'd like to see what all you've plotted as far as our earnings from Brightwood Estates.
Spreadsheet? What a clever name for my data charts. Yes, I will look for it right away, he said.
But first, you should rest, too, I suggested, after it was clear the older man could only walk in serpentine.
"Hmph,"
he grunted, and came to rest heavily against one of the cushioned chairs he bumped into. He removed his monocle and blinked a few squinty blinks before stashing the eyepiece in his trouser pocket, because his jacket was who knew where.
"Perhaps you're right. I must take myself to bed."
Instead of leaving the library, the koala man continued to mutter as he crawled onto the stuffed armchair and curled up on his side. He continued to talk about things he was going to do under his breath in a long, gibbering stream of consciousness diatribe that ended abruptly in a snore a second after he closed his eyes. "Is he?" I started to ask, but Jenner's arm suddenly shot out behind him like he was searching for something. Before I could look around for what it could possibly be, Horace strode up with the older man's treasured blue velvet coat and spread it out over his balled-up form. The koala man yanked the coat tightly around him, thumped his head back down, and began snoring once more. "There," Horace said, and brushed off his palms.
"He'll definitely sleep until morning, so don't worry about waking him."
"What did you do?" I questioned, as I observed the koala man saw through logs, like he'd been deeply asleep for hours and not just seconds. If he wasn't making so much of a ruckus snoring, I would have worried he was in a coma.
"I put him in a temporary coma,"
Horace opened with.
"You what?" I deadpanned.
"Temporary being the word you should pay attention to," he hurried to add. "According to what I found, I can't undo this alone. It would be best if we waited for Arnie. She's always been a lot more precise than me, and with something as delicate as this, we should take every precaution."
"What else were you able to find out about the enchantment?" I asked, when the subtext of his words alluded to something bigger than I thought. When Horace got quiet and pensive, I knew my instincts were on the correct path, and I waited tensely for him to organize his thoughts.
"Let me just put it this way. It's a marvel the old coot didn't trip the cursed traps after living with Miss Velly for so long,"
Horace finally sighed.
"Whoever wanted Jenna's entire species to forget about her did a good job at making contingencies."
"Shit," I stated.
"Don't fret. There is an upside to all this," he said with a grim smile.
"What's that?" I asked.
"Signs of a heavy-duty enchantment like this means your theory about the true prophetess conspiracy is much more likely," he said. "If you're right, and it comes to light that the Order has been naming the wrong acolytes, well, there's likely to be a great public outcry."
"So this is way bigger than just Amaya, then," I said. "Not a recent mistake with the records."
"Depending on how long it's been since they've been lying about the next prophetess," Horace said with a shrug, "who knows?
I just want to get our girls out of there, and let the Order fight amongst themselves for Mercedes' sake," I grumbled, and adjusted the koala man's makeshift blanket so it wouldn't slip off him during the night.
"We'll cross that crooked creek when we come upon it,"
Horace said, in a vague imitation of the archivist. "For now, we should also rest. Seeing as how our girls, as you put it, come into the harbor tomorrow." I brightened up at the mere thought of seeing my beloved Amaya again. And with that thought in mind, Horace and I left Jenner to his slumber and made our way up to our rooms. But when Horace went to head to his chambers on the second floor, I stopped him real fast. "Hey, H," I said, as I rubbed the back of my neck.
"Thanks for helping out."
"Of course, Chief."
He grinned a roguish grin and winked one of his gold-green eyes at me.
"It wouldn't do to have Mr. Jenner's brains leaking from his big ears, now would it?"
"Fuck, is that what could have happened?" I asked, as the gruesome image popped into my head.
"No, no, of course not. Well, I'm pretty sure, at least."
He backtracked in a way that was a little bit worrisome, but he shrugged a second later.
"Doesn't matter. He's in a deep sleep, and he's going to stay as such until Arnie and I can take a look together."
"Again, thanks," I said, and clapped him on the back.
"Ah, feels good, doesn't it?"
Horace remarked, as he slung an arm around my shoulders.
"What does?" I questioned,
and I wrinkled my nose when I could smell his pit odor. Gross.
"Horace and Alex, Alex and Horace, back to their old schemes," he said,
as if it had been decades since the band broke up, and we just conquered our first city on the reunion tour. Good to be back, man, I chuckled. And then I shoved him and his smelly pits off me. Now go take a bath, you smell.
You're one to talk,
the Falcon Man snorted, and then poked the divot in my chin.
And someone looks like they need a good shave. You're starting to look like a vagrant.
I don't know. I think your sister likes it, especially when I began to describe, but then was soundly cut off.
And you ruined it, he said,
and crossed his arms over his chest like I just gave his birthday away to another kid.
We were having such a lovely bit of banter, and you just had to go there.
Go to bed, doofus, I snorted, and headed for the stairs that led up to the third and final floor of the Flying Manor.
I'm going. And I'm going to wake up before you in the morning and drink all the coley, so there,
he heckled, because he could. And like a pair of five-year-olds, we each pulled faces at the other until we were both out of view. Mercedes. He really was a lunatic sometimes, but in the best sort of way. And I really was glad to have him at my side again.
Alex and Horace, Horace and Alex, I chuckled to myself, as I jogged up the rest of the stairs.
Along the way, all the jaunting allowed me to really get a good whiff of myself, and my nose twitched at how sharp my musk was.
Oof, yikes. I think Horace was right.
So when I entered the dark suite of rooms my wives and I called ours, I stripped off my tunic, armored belt, and boots, and then I tiptoed over to the large spa-like bathroom that was attached.
What do you think you're doing?
A low and seductive voice purred from the shadows. And my catwife jumped down on silent feet from her perch in the high window.
You almost scared me, I rumbled low in my chest.
I was just going to clean up a little bit. It's been days since I've had an actual bath that wasn't in lake water.
I know.
Zoe purred again and came closer to me, so I had no choice but to rest my hands on her hips while she sniffed my exposed collarbone.
Your natural scent has been highly concentrated as of late. I find myself highly aroused by it.
I raised my eyebrows as my tired body and brain tried to summon more than a feeble spark at the idea. Now was not the time, but if it was, I would be exploring this new tidbit as far as I could into the night. Later. For now, I rubbed my hands up and down under her flowy nightgown. And I brought her closer to me so she could smell the scent at the base of my throat to her heart's content. You're not letting me bathe tonight, are you? I finally concluded, after we stood there embracing each other under the moonlight pouring in from the high window.
No,
she said, and then switched from simply sniffing to actually licking my clavicle.
You wouldn't be able to anyway. Nova apparently loves to sleep underwater and has commandeered the room as hers.
Really? I asked, as my eyebrows trekked upwards. I'm definitely going to need to see that.
Tomorrow,
she huffed and dragged me over to the large bed. Shay was already asleep on her stomach with the mane of her hair splayed out over her bare back, and we were careful not to disturb her as we both slid in.
You really think I smell that nice, huh?
I chuckled quietly when Zoe immediately twined herself around me like a snake and stuck her nose back under my jaw. She purred in lieu of an answer, and I snuggled into her even harder.
What do you think about the beard?
I asked, before she could drop off to sleep.
It makes me want to hold you down and fuck you until you can't remember your name,
she said, and her matter-of-fact tone was so at odds with her deadpan delivery. I had to stop the bark of laughter that wanted to escape.
Now, go to sleep, love.
Well, that's not going to help me fall asleep. She cut me off by giving me a sound kiss, and I melted into the quiet intimacy of just being in the same bed as her again. And despite my earlier words, sleep carried me away on the crest of its soothing waves. When I awoke, I could tell I was still dreaming right away. But I'd never experienced such a vivid dream that wasn't the Dark Realm, or the chaotic swirl of imagery and sound that assaulted me whenever Aventhold decided she needed to tell me something. No, this was entirely different, because it was pleasant with a capital P, for one thing. I sat up after watching the sky swirl between different hues like yellow and orange watercolors splashed on a light blue canvas. And when I did, I glanced around at my surroundings. It seemed as if my dream landed me in a beautiful, lush green meadow that looked like it had been painted by hand, with vibrant acrylics and dotted with sunny smudge dandelions and lilac impressions of foxgloves. It was so picturesque, I felt as if I was in a work by Monet.
"Not bad, right?"
A sorely missed voice that reminded me of the wind through willow branches caused me to turn my head so sharply, I felt some of the vertebrae crack in my neck. "Amaya," I gasped, and rushed to her. She looked so beautiful in a pale yellow dress that offset her curly flaxen hair and made her rain-colored eyes glow like pearls. Her silver scimitar-like oryx horns caught the light with a flash, and when I scooped her up in my arms and spun her around, I couldn't help but be impressed with my brain on how accurate I got the details.
"I've missed you too, Alex,"
she giggled when I finally set her back on her feet. "I know it's only tomorrow when I finally get to see you, but apparently my brain couldn't wait," I joked to Dream Amaya. "I can't wait to hold the real you in my arms."
"Alex,"
she said, and arched a pale eyebrow.
"It is the real me."
"Not Dream Amaya, then. Real Amaya. Holy fuck. What? But how?" I spluttered as I looked her over at arm's length. "I thought you could only do stuff like this if you were in physical contact with the person."
"I've learned a few tricks,"
she winked and giggled again at my polaxed expression. But then her amused smile faded like the sudden shift in the wind.
"We are getting close to the Omite Harbor, and that is why I'm able to come to you like this. I've been trying for days to reach you."
The sky in our shared dreamscape darkened overhead with inky clouds of blue and purple like at the start of a storm. "Why, what's wrong?" I asked, when I registered the change in her demeanor.
"The soaring light,"
she said, right as it started to rain.
"It's been intercepted by pirates."